He couldn't tell. He put out a gloved hand, slapped more water, and then headed for the place in the dark where he thought the dog must be. He breasted the surface, half swimming but mostly treading water and slapping until his fingers brushed something hard that did not bob away, the edge of the break. He thrust a hand out even further, patting the darkness, and then layered over the ice, a denser melange of compacted snow. No dog, so it was still far away and he was running out of time. Reaching out with both hands, he pushed aside snow until he got to the ice, then flattened his palms and dug in. The gloves curled only grudgingly, and he realized the fabric had frozen to the ice. Could he use that? Maybe keep himself from drowning by letting his arms freeze to the ice? No good. I'd still die of hypothermia. Have to get out of the water. He scissored his legs as hard as he could. His body popped up, lurched forward like an ungainly seal. Not far. Even without his parka, he was sodden, his clothes waterlogged and very heavy. He didn't have the strength, but his chest was on the surface now, beginning to freeze to the ice, and that was a start. He sensed movement. The dog? Moving away? He was so weak he could only whisper the dog's name. Nothing. Then the black closed down, and Raleigh snuffled at his ear. Oh, God! Tom sobbed out of breath. Slipping one cautious hand from a glove, he reached up until he felt the dog's ruff. The dog responded by licking his fingers. The urge to grab onto the animal was so great he had to force himself to go slowly. No fast moves, nothing sudden. Easy, easy. And then Tom's fingers slid up and under the dog's collar. The dog didn't shy away. Tom pulled a little harder and then tensed his right arm. At the sudden tug, the dog began to back away, which was fine, exactly what he needed as he kicked and swam his way through snow. And then he was out, completely flopping like a hooked trout onto the ice. Water streamed from his body. He lay on his back, spread-eagled, sucking air as the dog licked water from his face. Get up, he thought. Get up or you'll freeze to the ice. Come on, get up. Get off the ice. Get warm. Oh, but the dog's tongue was warm, and so was its breath, and he was so tired. Numb, actually. No feeling in his feet or hands, and so cold he wasn't even shivering. Just had to rest a few seconds was all. Don't pass out. He thought his eyes were open, but it was so dark. The dog nosed his neck, and then he felt its paw on his chest. Come on, get up. Don't pass out. You can't pass out. He was still thinking that when he did. Chapter 40 Ray pulled the trigger. The Browning's action clicked and snapped, and that was all. Clearly waiting for the boom, Ray held his stance for a fraction of a second, then blinked and stared stupidly at the useless weapon. No! He tossed away the Browning with a fast, quick flick as if the metal had suddenly flared red hot. Gulping, he stumbled back a step, hands out, palms up. No! No! Leopard moved, his right hand flashed, and then the Glock's muzzle, wicked and black, dug into the nude space just above Ray's nose. Don't! Alex and Daniel cried at the same moment. Stop! Daniel shouted. Don't do this! Ruby! Ray's eyes, wild with terror, rolled in their sockets, trying to find his wife, but she had fainted in a bright, blood-red lake. There was a sudden tongue of muzzle flash, and the Glock bucked. Chapter 41 The shot echoed and dissolved, shredded by snow and wind. The air became leaden with the reek of burned hair and cooked brain and fresh death, and the changed, always the fume and choke of the changed. Sharon still had Ruby's wrist in a death grip. Blood splashed the big woman from the neck down. Ruby was limp and still. Stepping away from Ray's body, Leopard slid his Glock into his waistband as Acne helped Beretta to his feet. Spider still hovered over Jack, whose face was white as milky glass. Only the boy's eyes showed any sign of life, and they ticked from the ruin of Ray's head to his brother. Daniel was the color of ash and still as a statue in a swirl of snow, like the dead air at a hurricane's heart. Of all people, Sharon broke the silence. There! You got what you wanted! The choice was made! Doesn't matter if the boy did it or not! Oh, yes, it did. Alex understood why the Changed had offered only that particular weapon. She also realized something else. Nathan's rifle had not misfired or jammed, after all. If that were true, the barrel would have blown apart. She thought back to Nathan's reluctance and Jess's insistence. Piece of cake, really. Remove the bolt action, slip out the firing pin or fatigue the spring, replace the bolt, and no one would be the wiser. She could see Nathan play-acting, because she was certain Jess would have anticipated that, all things being equal, Alex would try to fight back when the Changed attacked and might even get off a shot. So the Browning was never meant to fire. The old woman wouldn't want to risk Alex turning the tables and killing her grandson. Which means that she knew Wolf was out there waiting. Jess knew. Alex had been right about something else, too. This was a test. The Change must have inspected the rifle and known it was useless. They'd only wanted to see what Daniel would do. Why, she didn't know, but the final outcome, what would happen next, was never in doubt. "Don't do this," she said, head swiveled, the eyes of all the Changed locked. "You have the other kids. You have us. How much more do you need? You have enough to last you a good long time. You don't need to do this." "What?" She saw the slow dawn of horror on Daniel's face as he finally understood. "No." He looked around wildly. "Please, let him go. Please." "Daniel?" Jack's voice rose, and then the little boy's head craned around to Spider, who was planting her feet, all the better to keep her balance. Her wound dripped crocodile tears of bloody pus. "Daniel!" Jack said. "Daniel!" "No!" Alex screamed it, and so did Daniel. She sprang for Spider, but then Leopard's crew converged. They slammed her, bucking and kicking, to the snow. "He's just a boy!" she cried. "He's just a little boy!" Across the circle, she saw Daniel suddenly churning through the snow, his face contorted in a spasm of love and fury and despair. "No, please, God, no!" he shrieked. "No, no, 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 no!" It took five of them to hold Daniel down. It took Spider only a minute. Part 4. In the Valley of the Shadow. In the Hour of the Monster. Chapter 42. "Come on!" Sharon bawled. She hunched over an unconscious Ruby, now sprawled on a braided rug before the guesthouse fireplace. A strong woman and big, not even Sharon could stop the thin, fitful blood geysers pumping from Ruby's severed wrist. The rug was slowly turning a deep rust color as Ruby's arteries emptied. "Come on, come on, come on!" "Just a sec, just a sec!" Fumbling, Alex stripped the lace from her boot and then crowded in beside Sharon. She lashed the lace around Ruby's forearm a few inches down from the old woman's blood-stained elbow, once, twice. For a moment, she worried the polypropylene would saw right through Ruby's skin, which was frail and paper-thin. Well, screw that. She put some muscle into it, cinched down hard. "Okay, ease up." The big woman's fingers cautiously relaxed. The steady crimson pump dribbled to an ooze. "Christ!" Sharon was panting. Her sweat-drenched face was matted with hanks of her bullet-gray hair. Drying blood fanned her chest and neck. "What the hell are we going to do?" "I don't know. Hang on." When they'd staggered back to the guest house with Ruby, Acne and Slash had followed, dumping six of the camo packs in after them. Now Alex snatched up one and pawed through the contents. Food, clothes. She tried not to pay attention to the smells of trail mix and MREs, the spike of a packet of peppermint gum. Or the clothes, either. Floral soap, talcum warmed by a child's skin. She found no ammunition in the pack, and the Changed muscle had pulled anything remotely resembling a weapon, so no knives or scissors either. Come on, come on. These kids were prepared. There's got to be something. She tumbled out another pack, gave the contents a quick going over, her eyes brushing over a pair of boys' pajamas, Spider-Man. She grabbed up a third pack. What are you looking for? Sharon asked. Her voice was limp as a spent balloon. Ruby's blood shellacked both arms to her elbows. Medical supplies. Alex upended the pack in a shower of pink and purple that smelled of vanilla and little girl. These kids were ready to be on the road for a while. Fourth try, pay dirt. She sifted through tubes of antibiotic ointment, bandages, antiseptic wipes, alcohol, gauze, tape, Curlix, and pills. Lots of pills. Over-the-counter packets of cold tablets, Tylenol, ibuprofen, cough drops. But there was a clutch of more potent stuff. Prescription painkillers like Percocet and Vicodin, a handful of tiny green Valiums, and the motherlode, antibiotics. Big pink horse pills of long-acting erythromycin and chalky white amoxicillin. Okay, almost in business, but there was still one hell of a problem. The second she took off that tourniquet, the bleeding would start right up. During the few amputations she'd done with Kincaid, he talked about isolating nerve from muscle to minimize phantom limb pain and how to clamp off blood vessels, what suture to use now that there was no power for electric cautery. Cautery, she gasped. That's it. What? Sharon asked as Alex pushed to her feet. Tom. She raced to the kitchen, started yanking open cupboards and pulling drawers. Tom had told her what to do. He'd talked her through it. She'd done this once before. Come on, come on. I smelled it before. I know I did. I know it's here. What are you doing? Sharon asked. Metal holds heat. She ripped open another cupboard. Dust mice and crumbs. The Changed had been smart enough to remove the obvious, knives, forks, anything that jumped out as a potential weapon. But not everything. There was something. All she had to do was follow her nose. So, if I can find something metal and get it hot enough, I can use that to stop the bleeding. As soon as she levered open the oven door, she smelled cooked sulfur, ancient grease. Gotcha. The skillet was upside down on the rack, cast iron, very small, speckled with rust, a little sticky from stale Crisco. Good enough. Grabbing a cooking mitt and the pan, she scuttled back. When they'd first arrived, she'd built up the fire to burn hot and fast through that first load of wood, mainly to warm the chimney and create the airflow to keep the fire going. The fire now had dwindled to red-hot embers. Slipping on the mitt, she reached in with a long split of oak. Get me more logs, she said. She used the split to shove aside spent wood. There, in the firebox. Laying the wood in a grid, she knelt, blew on the embers, and was rewarded with a flower of flame. She jockeyed the skillet onto a nest of red-orange coals. You sure this will work? Sharon said. No, but it's better than nothing. She waited until the smell of scorched iron filled the guest house, and then levered the skillet from the fire. The heat rolled off the iron, leaked through the mitt where the gray, fire-resistant covering had flaked away. Hold her down, she said to Sharon. Ruby was still out, but Alex didn't think that would last more than a nanosecond. No matter what, don't let up until I tell you to. I'm on it. Sharon straddled Ruby, pushing her knees into the little woman's shoulders. She grabbed Ruby's left arm in both hands. Go! Has to work. Gritting her teeth, she jammed the hot skillet onto Ruby's raw stump. There was a pop and then a sizzle. Ruby flopped, her legs pistoned straight out, her head jerked, and then her eyes were wide, and so was her mouth, and she was bucking and thrashing and screaming, screaming, screaming. Hold her! Hold her! Alex shouted. The smell was coming on, thick and heavy, the unmistakable aroma of fried meat and molten fat. Alex heard the fizz of boiling blood. Saliva suddenly flooded her mouth, spilled over her tongue as her brain registered that this was meat. It was meat. This was the aroma of food. Hamburgers on the grill, juicy steaks. Come on, don't lose it. It doesn't mean anything. Her body didn't care. A huge hunger rat clawed at her belly. To her horror, her stomach let out a long, very loud growl. But then, for once, it happened the way things are supposed to in make-believe. Ruby passed out. Thank Christ, Sharon breathed. Alex had one precious second when she really thought everything would be all right, that she could chalk up her hunger for Ruby's meat to some ghost of an ancient past when cavemen hunkered over roast saber-toothed tiger. But then her mind shifted again. The sensation was almost like a sound, a dry rustle as the monster flexed its muscles. Out of nowhere, that swimmy feeling washed over and through her mind, spiking the hairs on her neck. A whir bloomed in her brain, black sound, and then her mouth filled with the wet, mushy funk of warm iron and something so slick it tasted like boiled snot. No, she gasped, her gorge, sour and hot, pushed up through her chest, and then she was spinning up and away. The skillet thudded to the hardwood with a dull clang, and Sharon was shouting, what, what, what? She didn't care. Alex bolted for the door at a dead run, and then she was out in the storm, the snow swirling in a white rush, the wind clawing at her hair. No guard at the door. None was needed because of the storm. Through the snow, across the clearing, the changed were feasting. The party was just getting started. She had no idea where they'd taken Daniel, but she saw what they'd done to Jack. Against the jump of orange flames, the spit turned like something out of a grade B movie, the carcass threaded onto forked wood lashed together with, of all things, extension cords. The stench of scorched rubber competed with the aroma of broiled meat and crisped fat. Spider was right there in the thick of it, cheeks bulging, her skin ruddy with firelight and excitement. She was pressing a fistful of something to Leopard's mouth, and Alex felt the edge of his teeth ghosting over her own fingers. God! An icy knife of horror cut her chest. No! She watched as Leopard pulled Spider closer, and it was her skin that crawled as Leopard's tongue dragged over Spider's neck. Oh, my God! It was happening again, her mind slewing sideways, stepping away, and into Spider. No! A surge of bile roared from her mouth to splatter to the snow. She isn't me! I'm not her! I'm not one of them! I'm not— Hey! Sharon called, get your ass back here! God, what's happening to me? Alex's muscles were shuddery and weak. Sagging against the door, she pressed her sweaty face to icy wood. I'm not Spider. I'm Alex, and I'm here. I'm here. I'm right here. But then she thought she heard just the faintest whisper sighing up from a deep, dark crevice of her mind. Or maybe she didn't really hear anything, and it was a hallucination conjured from her addled, sick brain. Whatever, it was there, sardonic and small. Maybe, it, the monster, said. But so am I. So am I. Chapter 43 You did good. Sharon vacuumed in a mouthful of trail mix and chomped. With the other hand, she plucked at a red and black flannel shirt they draped over Ruby. The little woman had swum to a kind of twilight awareness long enough for Alex to feed her in erythromycin and Percocet before sinking back. Alex had worried about the dose because Ruby was so small, but knocking her out seemed both prudent and humane. Time enough to deal with the night's horrors tomorrow. I would never have thought to use the frying pan. Sharon smoothed the shirt under Ruby's chin. That was real smart, Alex.
Yeah, well.
Alex palmed a pink tablet of erythromycin. After bandaging Ruby up and then taking care of her shoulder, she'd sifted through the pill bottles, debating which was best, and decided upon erythromycin, a drug she was familiar with from her work with Kincaid. The pills had belonged to a Bev Ulrich, who had been a very bad patient, only taking 4 tablets when her doctor specifically prescribed 2 a day for 14 days, or else. Or maybe Bev had been a very good patient, only the zap happened, and then bronchitis was the least of her problems. The label said to drink plenty of water and take the medicine on a full stomach. Yeah, right. She could hear Aunt Hannah. Not bloody likely. What am I going to do? The thought of her aunt made the tiny black letters on the prescription labels squiggle and shimmer. Erythromycin sure wouldn't cure what ailed her, but she dry-swallowed the antibiotic, which caught and hung in her throat. It's winning, Aunt Hannah. After all this, the monster's finally going to win. Hey! Sharon fished out a bottled water and twisted off the cap. Better chase that if you want it to go down. Thanks. She tipped the bottle to her mouth, wincing a little at the taste. The water smelled of blood and iron and dead Jack. You okay? Sharon asked around peanuts. Sure. The smell of soggy nuts and sickly sweet raisins was turning her stomach. It's just... She gave a hard swallow and felt the antibiotic knuckle its way down her chest. How can you eat after what happened? She expected an explosion, but Sharon only swallowed, shrugged, said, Me starving isn't going to help that little boy. He's dead, and I'm sorry about that, but I'm not dead, and neither are you. Now get some food in your stomach. You look like shit. What do you care if I eat? Alex gave her a sidelong glance. If I don't, it's just that much more for you, right? That's true, but you're smarter. If I get hurt, you know what to do. I'm hedging my bets. So here, Sharon tossed her an MRE. Eat that before I force it down your gullet like my grandpa did his geese. Geese? Yeah, Sharon snorted. He thought he was going to get rich making that Frenchy food. Had a liver? Foie gras? That's it. He had this big metal tube. Sharon's hands bracketed a good foot of air. About yay long. I had to hold the goose's head while he shoveled in the grain. Maybe 2 pounds of feed, 4 times a day. Poor things. They would struggle and choke. Used to make me cry. That old man never did get rich, neither. He was so impatient, he ended up with more geese with busted guts than ones he could carve the livers out of. Near about went broke on that scheme, and good riddance to bad rubbish, but I got in plenty of practice with force-feeding. I don't think you want to find out just how much. That, Alex thought, was about as close to an apology as she would ever get from Sharon. Alex's eyes skimmed the label of the MRE, spaghetti with meat sauce. Just the thought of wormy noodles swimming in red sauce made her stomach lurch, but she forced her trembling fingers to work open the box and pouches. The MRE came with a heater pack, but when she tried adding water, she slopped it onto her jeans. Whoa, whoa, hang on. Let me do it. Deftly plucking the MRE and heater pack from Alex, Sharon added water, then slid the MRE into its heater pouch. You worried about that boy, Daniel? Think they're carving him up, too? A bad way to put it, but this was Sharon. I doubt it. They always make us watch, like they did with... She paused. I just don't understand why they haven't put him here with us. What could they want with him? How about information? You heard the boy. Ambushing those bastards was his idea. So maybe they think they'll get more out of him. If I was them, that's what I'd do. Except, Sharon's face puckered in a frown, I don't know how. They aren't exactly the talkative types, you know what I'm saying? This was true, but Daniel had said something important to the changed. You said you'd let him go. What had he meant? The changed made occasional sounds, but they didn't speak. She didn't know if they could. Maybe the speech centers in their brains had shorted out. So how did the changed say anything to someone who hadn't become one of them? She understood them, but only sort of and occasionally, and even that was mediated only by smell and those weird slip-slides. What she got was more inference than anything else, which wasn't the same as an actual exchange of information, and Wolf had never given any indication that he understood her. What she had with the changed was like a bizarre kind of empathy, like a sixth sense that was growing stronger. Because she was changing? No. Even as she thought that, she felt her mind working to shove the idea away. No, it's been too long, and Tom said that when his friend Jim began to change, he got confused. He forgot things. But she already knew that the change didn't happen to little kids or older people, and kids hadn't changed at the same rate. Some changed right away, within minutes, on that first day, while others went for days, which might mean that how you changed depended on who you were. A boy's hormones weren't the same as a girl's. The brain of a little kid wasn't the same as that of a 14-year-old. Her scrambled mind had about as much in common with a normal person's as a cat did with an orangutan. Or maybe the zap had triggered something in the monster. Kincaid said there was no telling if the monster was dead or dormant or still alive, but morphing, maybe even evolving. Organizing itself was how Kincaid put it. But God, the idea of it actually becoming its own thing brought the goose flesh to her arms, and she felt a shiver work its way up her spine. That was just a little creepy, but it could happen. When she'd been diagnosed, she'd read a ton. Anything by Oliver Sacks she embraced like a Bible. So she knew that for reasons doctors didn't understand, certain tumors became things, grew their own teeth and skin, sprouted hair and cartilage and eyeballs like little mini-me's. Completely freaked her out. Tumors caused seizures, too, especially as more and more of the brain was either taken over by tumor or squished and shoved and elbowed out of the way. Seizures might trigger out-of-body experiences, which were exactly what she'd experienced. So, in the end, the only thing her switcheroos might prove was that the monster was sending up a little red flare to signal the end of this particular game. 2-minute warning, sweetheart. Which meant her choices about what to do weren't that different from before this nightmare began back in October, when she'd run off to the Waccamaw. She could stay on the train, go to the very end of the line where those tracks would give out, or jump off. "But I heard of this going on," Sharon continued. "What?" She was so deep in her own thoughts that she had to work to tease out the thread of their conversation, and then realized she really had no idea what the older woman was talking about.
"What going on?"
"Bands of kids fighting those monsters. Makes sense when you think about it. The kids who haven't turned, they're the only ones fit enough to track the Chuckies. Don't get me wrong, I can point and shoot, but heading out through the snow, skiing and camping out..." Her lips twisted in a wry, self-deprecating grimace as she tugged at a flaccid wattle beneath her jaw, deforming the tired strands of that spiderweb tattoo. "A little too much meat and a few too many years."
"What about in your group, the people you lived with before?" Alex asked. "Did some of you fight? Were there kids?"
Sharon busied herself readying another MRE. "Not really. All our kids, well, grandkids mostly, they turned. The three who didn't were practically babies. The rest of us were too busy scrounging around for food and staying warm to worry much about fighting."
"All our kids turned."
She bit back the urge to grill the old woman on just how that happened and what the signs were.
"What would it be like to watch your grandchildren change? What would you do? Kill them?"
There had to be some adults who just couldn't pull the trigger or who wouldn't give up hope, but then it would be as Larry had said 1,000 years ago in the Waccamaw, how do you live with yourself afterward either way? She chose to leave it alone.
"Do you know anything else about kids like Daniel, the ones who are fighting?"
"No, but we figured they gotta have some older kids like him or adults, if only to teach them how not to blow their heads off. Here." Sharon handed Alex the cardboard box containing her packet of spaghetti and meatballs. "Eat up while it's hot."
The cardboard box was soggy and the packet inside just the near side of scalding. Carefully, she tweezed the pouch apart. Fiddleheads of steam unfurled in a stomach-churning stench of hot plastic and stewed tomato. Inside, the noodles shimmered in a slick, oily, copper-colored ooze, like ropey nerves and torn veins in a puddle of old blood.
"Something wrong with that spaghetti?" Sharon asked.
"Maybe I am cooked and sticking the fork done or pretty close."
"No,"
Alex said, and shoved in a squelchy mouthful of oily pasta. "But I'm not there yet, and when it's time, it'll be me that does it, not Spider or Leopard or anyone else."
"It's great."
She chewed those noodles to glue.
"Just great."
An hour later, the change came for her. Chapter 44. The reek of sex and booze hit a good 100 yards from the front door of the old Victorian while she was still shuffling after Slash through the snow. Yep, Saturday night, and time to get down, get dirty, get funky. Not that she'd be partying. She studied Slash's back as the girl lumbered against the wind. The girl's scent was more sour than ever, but void of useful information. Alex had been mystified until Slash towed the medical supplies Alex had gathered into neat piles.
"Looks like they want you to play doctor," Sharon had observed, then gestured toward the stash of pills. "Leave me a bunch of them painkillers and sleepers, you don't mind, just in case Ruby wakes up."
"Sure."
The rest, gauze, bandages, sterile packs of instruments, ointments, a bottle of peroxide, Alex shoved into a camo pack.
"But go easy. Ruby's pretty small. You don't want to overdose her."
"Don't you worry. I'll take care of both of us. Now you go on and do what you have to. And Alex,"
Sharon's eyes had battened on hers for a long, disconcerting moment,
"that boy, Daniel, he's just lost his little brother. He's got some dark days ahead. No matter what comes down the pike, you stick by him."
She had said something noncommittal, like, "Okay, sure." But what had that been about? She would help Daniel, no problems there. But if they were taking her to Beretta, they had another thing coming. That kid could rot for all she cared. Besides, if she helped them, that brought her one step closer to being them. "And I'm not going to let them or it win." The house was much warmer than the guest cabin, and feverish with the odor of sex. Both fireplaces were going. In a place this size, there had to be a couple wood stoves, too. In the dance of orange light and dark shadow, she saw a tangle of bodies, mostly naked, and the glint of empties. Someone had definitely puked in the far right corner. A girl, one of Leopard's crew, was sandwiched on an ottoman between two writhing boys. Acne slouched on a sofa with his pants puddled around his ankles, a girl's head bobbing between his legs.
"Too much information."
She'd actually braced herself as she entered, expecting her mind to do its slewing swoon again, but nothing happened, which made her wonder if her hypotheses were all wrong. Maybe this had nothing to do with hunger, sexual or otherwise.
"Because if ever there was a time and place..."
She sidestepped two drunken boys fondling one another on the stairs.
"This was definitely it."
Once on the second floor, Slash turned right, which was interesting. From the odor, she knew Beretta was behind her in the far room to the left. So this was not about him. They passed a display table with doilies and bric-a-brac, a blur of framed photos. Bedrooms up here, too. She caught Spider's scent almost at once from behind a closed door. From the melange of odors, she thought there might be two others in there with her, and one, she thought, might be... Almost on cue, the knob turned, and then Spider and Leopard ghosted into view. Spider's blonde hair was tousled, and Leopard had an arm twined about the girl's waist. Both were completely naked and reeked of sex and garbage.
When he spotted Alex, Leopard actually leered, his eyes dragging lazily up and down Alex's body, lingering, taking inventory. As Sharon would say, no mystery what itch that boy wanted scratched.
Oh, shit. Alex's heart stilled. God, please, I really could do without a little side trip, thanks. Concentrate on something else, anything else.
She screwed her eyes to the hole in Spider's cheek and stared so hard it was a wonder Spider's face didn't burst into flames. What Spider did instead was smile, and that was somehow much worse, because her grin was slow and so satisfied Alex half expected the girl to purr. Spider's was the kind of gleeful smirk every kid's seen 100 times on the lips of the most popular girl in school.
So sucks to be you.
A minute later, after Spider and Leopard had closed the door again, Slash led her to the threshold of the room at the very end of the hall. Here, the odors were very strong, too. A boy's sweat and blood and...
Oh, God.
Her heart tried climbing out of her chest, and for just a moment, the slightly metallic aftertaste of prefab spaghetti sauce took on a rankness that brought a surge of sour bile into her throat. Because now she thought she understood just exactly why Spider had smiled. Chapter 45 Slash left a few seconds later, probably heading downstairs to knock back a few, hook up, make up for lost time. That she left Alex alone should have made her less anxious.
Nothing to see here, folks. Move along.
That Alex could feel the tension fizzing on her skin like an electrical charge.
Just take it easy.
She wet her lips, grateful for the taste of her own salt. Anything was better than the scummy sludge coating her tongue.
It might be nothing. There are so many of them in the house, the stinks everywhere.
This room, she saw, had belonged to a boy with eclectic tastes. A poster of LeBron James competed for space with Derek Jeter, a baseball mitt butted tennis balls. There was a red and white electric guitar in a corner. A poster of some drummer she'd never seen playing in a band she'd never heard of was taped to a closet door. Daniel was on the bed, propped against the headboard in a tumble of blue and brown striped sheets that his blood had stained dark purple. A Coleman lantern fizzed on a nightstand. In the harsh, unforgiving white light, the shadows beneath his eyes were black. His eyes were distant and unfocused and did not meet hers, even when she said his name twice and touched his face. His skin was waxen and greasy with sweat. Daniel's wound was low on his left flank, a through-and-through, which probably accounted for why he was still alive. Working as gently as she could, she cleaned away the blood on his stomach, most of which had dried to a crust and now peeled away in large rust flakes. She splashed peroxide over the purple lips of the entry wound. The liquid hissed and bubbled into pink foam. Daniel reacted to that. His lids twitched, and something fleet and fast chased over his face. His eyes ticked away from whatever horror they were watching, swept past her face, then wavered back.
Hi,
he said. That settled something in her mind. Daniel was right here, right now, and he needed her help. Besides, her brain kept snagging on what Daniel had said on the snow.
You said you'd let him go. If Daniel could actually hear and talk to the changed, that alone was worth the risk. Hi,
she said.
Can you roll onto your side? I want to clean off your back. I'm pretty sure the bullet went right through, but I want to be certain.
Sure. Wincing, he eased over. From the way his flesh jumped, she knew the peroxide hurt, but he said nothing. The Coleman's light bleached his skin bone white. The quarter-sized exit wound stared at her like a wet, black fisheye. After patting the wound dry, she smeared on antibiotic ointment and used surgical tape to tack down gauze. She fed him an erythromycin, then made him drink half a bottle of water in small sips. With the remaining water, she wet one of the towels and sponged his face. He said thickly,
"It was my fault."
She paused, the cool cloth pressed to his cheek.
"Because you led the ambush?"
Yeah. His eyes stumbled to her face. Melly told me not to do anything stupid, but I did.
Melly?
The woman who gathered us all together. Kind of like the mom in the Terminator movies, you know? Only more like a group grandmom.
She taught you how to fight?
When Daniel nodded, she asked,
Where'd you get all the guns?
Oh, lying around.
Daniel sounded as used up as old chewing gum.
You can find almost anything you want. We've even got some grenade launchers.
She remembered those Uzis, and that kid from Leopard's crew with the bandolier. Definitely loaded for bear.
Where's Melly now? Is she dead?
No.
Daniel's head rolled on the pillows.
Gone.
Why'd she leave?
She said she'd lost a couple kids before we joined up with her outside Hurley.
Where's that?
Wisconsin, at the border. Bounty hunters is what she thought.
Bounty hunters?
Scooping up kids as barter made a terrible kind of sense. Harlan had seen Spared as a meal ticket, and that was months ago. Rule certainly thought Spared, especially girls, were of immense value.
For whom?
Depends. There are so many stories, I never know what to believe. Some said military, like, you know, army. One girl, Sandra, thought people were trying to figure out why we were still okay, like experimenting.
Her stomach dropped. It suddenly occurred to her that maybe, for all its problems, Rule had the right idea. There had been no question that she was safer in the village than outside, and the changed were only one of many enemies.
Wait, what am I thinking? Lena was right. The council saw us as baby makers. We were still barter, something to be used. So they got rewarded for bringing kids in? She asked.
Uh-huh. I was the oldest, so Melly left me in charge. She said to take the others to this camp she knew about, where we'd be safe.
And how, she thought, would Melly know?
The idea of Grandma scooping up kids and leading them to sanctuary gave her pause. What made Melly more trustworthy than any other oldster? Probably best to save those particular questions. Second-guessing wouldn't do Daniel a whit of good, and she needed information.
Camp? Where? What kind?
With other kids, here in Michigan, but way south of where we are now. Maybe,
Daniel's eyebrows tented with effort,
another week, on foot.
Other kids. Sharon had talked about groups of children fighting the changed, so they were gathering together? And south meant they'd gone north, but how far?
So where are we exactly? I mean, are we close to any towns? Because I've lost track. We've been on the move for...
She thought back to the knot she'd made that morning.
8 days. 9 now. It must be past midnight and Sunday now. I figure we went 6 or maybe 7 miles a night, depending. I don't know much about Michigan. I'm from way west in Wisconsin, near Mellon.
When she shook her head, Daniel added,
About halfway between Clam Lake and Hurley.
The names meant nothing to her. Other than her aunt's hometown of Sheboygan, the rest of Wisconsin was just a through state, a long expanse of highway she blasted through to get from Chicago to Michigan.
Why come here? Why not stay in Wisconsin?
We heard it was better, safer in the UP.
Well, not so much.
Okay, so where are we?
Real close to the border. Maybe...
Daniel let out an almost disinterested sigh, as if the math was just too much.
2 days away? On foot?
She hated peppering him with questions, but she had to know.
Which direction? Do you remember any towns? Is the border west?
Wisconsin was due west of Rule.
North?
She thought that might be right. Was Hurley west of the Waccamaw? God, she wished she'd paid closer attention to the maps she and Tom had found.
We're east of the border now. Wisconsin's a straight shot due west, Daniel said. The camp we were heading to is...
His parched lips moved as he did a mental tally.
About a week out and south of this old mine, which Melly said was where all these Chuckies were hanging out, and...
What? Hadn't Chris's grandfather operated a mine? Yes, that was right. Some of the older miners had been living in a wing of the hospice. Chris read to them when he was in town. Do you know the name of the mine?
No. Just some old iron mine, I guess. I had a map, but I lost it somewhere. All I know is we're about 5 days northwest of the mine, and there are supposed to be a ton of Chuckies there, too.
You mean like a big tribe?
More like a lot of smaller groups moving in and out. Kind of like a home base, I guess. Melly said they probably chose the mine because they knew it from before, and mines are warmer the deeper you go.
She thought about that. Would Spider and Leopard circle south, too? Go hang with their friends, maybe toss back a couple brews and carve up some nice juicy steaks, throw some hamburgers on the grill? There was no way to know the answers, and in some sense it didn't matter. Without Wolf, Alex thought her time was nearly up. Spider needed her for Daniel, no question about that, and in more ways than one. Unless the change figured on Alex becoming their camp nurse, Spider had no incentive to let her live indefinitely. But if this was the rural mine Daniel was talking about, they were still relatively close to the village.
Got to figure out where I am.
Her mind was already leapfrogging ahead, ticking off the steps.
This might be my best and last chance. Even a rough map will do.
Her eyes settled on that desk across the room. If I got paper and pencil, could you draw it from memory? His head made a weary shake.
I'm not so good with that.
She squelched a pulse of irritation. Could you at least try?
Can we not do this right now?
Daniel's lips trembled. His face was pinched, the strain and his grief carved in deep lines across his forehead and along his nose.
Can't we do this later?
She had to snatch back the impulse to grab him by the shoulders and give him a good shake.
No, don't you get it? We really can't.
But she forced herself to slow down.
I know it's hard, but this is important, Daniel. I know you feel bad. I've lost people, too. There was this little girl, and then...
She felt her eyes welling.
Then I failed someone I really cared about, and I tried the best I could, but it still wasn't good enough, and he's dead now because of me. So I do know what it's like to want to give up. I really do, but you can't. Please.
She put a trembling hand on his chest.
Please, Daniel, think... Try to remember. Where's the camp?
The boy's eyes were pools.
Alex, I don't know. I really don't. I wish I did, but all I remember is that once we got across the border, Melly told me to keep heading south.
Did she say why?
Only that going too far east and deeper into Michigan would be bad. I didn't think to ask any more. I thought there was plenty of time, and I was so tired out and scared. Jack and me, we were on our own for so long. It was a relief to have someone tell me what to do. I only wish I'd really listened.
What do you mean?
I mean...
He began, then stopped. A huge tear trembled at the corner of his left eye.
Daniel?
When he still didn't reply, she touched his cheek. His skin was clammy and slick as cold marble.
Daniel,
she said softly.
What did you mean? Why didn't you listen to Melly? Why didn't you do what she said?
She watched the tears swell, then splash to his cheek, and the sour scent of his loss and despair, and worse, the scorch of his self-contempt, bawled in her throat.
Because I just couldn't, he choked. Not after I saw you.
Chapter 46. That knocked her back.
Me? What are you talking about? We spotted your guys, the wolf people, like 3 days ago, and then we...
His streaming eyes meandered away a moment, then drifted back.
We tracked you.
You... She began, then stopped. 3 days ago, Brian was still alive.
Are you kidding me? You tracked us for 3 days?
She wanted to slap his face.
You had guns, you had grenade launchers. What the hell were you waiting for, an engraved invitation? Why? I told you.
Daniel lifted a quivering hand to his lips.
I tracked you because I saw you. I couldn't let the Chuckies have someone normal. You're one of us. I couldn't let them just have you. So we followed you, and then waited for an opportunity to take them out.
Oh, my God. Daniel had talked the other kids into a rescue mission. Kids would want to save their own. The really young ones, not yet old enough to understand how bad things could get, might have been pumped. For them, a rescue would be like playing a kick-ass video game.
What I don't know is how the wolf people knew we were coming, Daniel said. We stayed downwind and everything, just like Melly taught us. That other tribe...
Tribe? Sure, like Wolf's Pack, Leopard's Crew might be called a tribe. The kids in white?
Yeah, they came out of nowhere. We only got off a couple shots, and then Jack...
He put an arm over his eyes and turned his head toward the far wall. Her anger vanished. What the hell was she doing? She had no right. Daniel was no older than she, and all he'd tried to do was help her, and look how well that turned out. She felt sick again and weak. This really wasn't her fault. She wasn't to blame. She couldn't control everything. Shit happened. Yeah, right. God, first Tom, then Chris gets hurt because of me. And now Daniel's friends get themselves killed, and Jack... Daniel reeled in a watery breath.
They surprised that wolf guy, too.
Through the bitter fog of her guilt, it took her a second to register. The guy? You mean Wolf? The sudden tightness in her chest was something she could have done without. Why she should care about a monster was still beyond her.
You saw him?
Yeah. The girl, the one with the face.
He tapped his cheek.
She shot him.
Shot?
The word dried up on her tongue.
Spider shot him?
When he threw her a questioning look, she added,
It's what I call her. She's got that designer gear, so... Why did she shoot him? What for?
She could see Daniel thinking about that.
She was angry, like she didn't want to be there at all. I'm not exactly sure how I know that, but she was.
Beware.
A clearing, maybe a half mile from here. They were doing this really weird ritual thing. You know those wolf skins they wear? Well, they had a real live wolf, this great big gray guy they'd probably trapped or snared. I couldn't see everything because it was getting on dark and the snow had already started. But the wolf was really strong, fighting the ropes. The girl, Spider, she had that big honking knife, and so did the guy. I'm sure they were going to kill and then skin it.
This was news. She knew nothing about this side of the changed. She thought back to that arena near Rule, the way flanked by flayed wolf carcasses.
What happened? She asked. To the wolf, I mean.
I don't know. In the confusion, it might have gotten away. But the way the wolf people were gathered around, it felt like...
He groped for the word...
Religious. Except for the girl, the spider. She was pissed, like it wasn't her idea.
That was the second, no, third time Daniel seemed to either know or intuit how the changed felt.
So I was thinking, great, hit them now when they're distracted, he continued. Only the other guys swarmed all over us, and then I saw her with one of them, a real tall guy,
Leopard.
Okay.
Daniel accepted the nickname.
Leopard went right up to her, and then she was yanking out his pistol. She turned fast, popped off a couple shots at the wolf boy. He was moving before she got all the way around, and then he made it to the woods, but you could tell he got hit. She started after him, only the little guy tried to stop her, and then she popped him in the back.
The little guy would be Beretta. She thought about that. She had assumed the changed could read one another, like telepaths in a way, but that wasn't quite right, was it? Wolf never saw Spider coming, or by the time he did, there wasn't enough time to save himself. So the changed couldn't be, well, broadcasting all the time, if that's even what they did.
But that's why I'm here with Daniel.
It was another hunch, a brain ping, but she thought she was right. Spider killed Wolf. Slash took me to Daniel, which means Spider's just as happy if Beretta gets neglected to death. Why? Because Beretta was loyal to Wolf? That was plausible. Of the pack, Beretta and Acne seemed closer to Wolf than Slash was. Guys tended to hang with guys. Slash and Spider were the only girls. Maybe Slash was a minion, the kind of high school kid grateful to be a remora to Spider's shark. And how had Spider gotten word to Leopard in the first place? How did she know Leopard? From before? Unless...
Daniel, she said, you told me there were other Chuckies at the mine, right? Do you know how many? Are they like tribes who cooperate with each other, or...
I don't know.
His lips wobbled. He averted his face again.
Really, I have to stop now. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
All right.
And it really was. She wasn't sure she could bear any more unexpected revelations anyway. She fished an MRE from her camo pack of medical supplies.
It's chicken with noodles. I brought along a bouillon cube, too. The doctor I worked with said chicken noodle soup was good when you'd lost blood.
He gave the packet a listless glance.
I'm not hungry. You should try.
When he shook his head again, she persisted.
Are you thirsty?
A little.
Tears trickled from the corners of his eyes to wet the pillowcase.
I just want to sleep and not wake up.
She said nothing.
Why haven't they killed me yet, Alex?
He whispered.
Why are they keeping me alive?
To those questions, she had no answers he would want to hear. When his shoulders began to shake, she felt an impulse to put her arms around him, but she wasn't sure he would want that, or if it was even the right thing to do. She had never seen a boy cry like that before. Well, not since she'd accidentally, on purpose, elbowed Scott Rittenhouse off the jungle gym in first grade. The sound of Daniel's grief was terrible, like a hacksaw through her heart, and he cried a long time.
Sorry.
His voice was thinner and no more substantial than worn tissue paper.
All cried out, she thought.
Would you stay with me for a while?
He said in that same fragile voice.
I don't want to be alone with them.
She thought of Sharon and Ruby back at the guest house. If they were lucky, Ruby would sleep through the rest of the night. After that, well, she didn't know what she could do for her, other than top Ruby off with antibiotics and all those painkillers and hope she healed.
I'll stay for as long as they let me, she said. You should try to sleep.
I don't want to sleep. Every time I close my eyes, I see Jack. I see...
Shh, it's okay,
she said, hating how lame that sounded. Things were definitely not okay. She put a hand on his arm. He was trembling, and his eyes were bright and desperate. Too late, she thought, of the painkillers she'd left behind with Sharon and Ruby. Maybe it would be better and more merciful if he just went to sleep and never woke up.
What am I thinking? That's not my decision to make.
Alex?
He was shuddering, as if with a sudden fever.
I'm afraid to sleep. If I sleep, what will I find when I wake up?
You're just tired, she said. You're hurt.
I want to die, he said fiercely. If I had a gun, I'd blow my brains out. I would kill myself. But I'm a coward, and now Jack...
This time, as he wept, she held him. He still had plenty of tears. Eventually, he relaxed in her arms, his body draining of tension. She sensed him drifting off and decided that sleep was a mercy. In her heart, she thought she knew why the change had kept him. She might be wrong. Maybe if she held on to him, that would help.
Because nothing's written in stone. Look at me.
She'd read it in her aunt's face and behind all her doctor's look-on-the-bright-side bluster. Both were amazed she'd lasted as long as she had. By all rights, with the kind of monster living in her head, she ought to be dead. Whoever said, where there's life, there's hope, was spot on, though. There was, however, one thing she did have to know, because it might be important. A clue? A way to understand what was happening to her? She wasn't sure.
Daniel?
She whispered. She saw his lids twitch.
Daniel, are you still awake?
He muttered thickly. Beneath his lids, his eyes rolled. She hitched up until her lips brushed his ear.
Daniel, you said they told you they'd let Jack go. How did you know that, Daniel? Did they speak to you?
He didn't answer, and she thought it was too late, and he might already be asleep. Then a bedspring creaked as he stirred.
No,
he murmured. His eyes were still closed, but his throat moved in a hard swallow, and his tongue skimmed his lips as he worked to speak.
I don't know.
Pause.
Maybe.
Not really an answer.
What about smell? Is that how? Do you smell them? Daniel?
She stroked his cheek, reluctant to bring him back to the horror that sleep would take away, if only temporarily, but she had to know.
Daniel, what do you smell?
This time there was a long, long pause.
You,
he said.
Chapter 47. According to Mickey, Slash dragged in to fetch her at 7. By then, the room had brightened, and through the slits of Venetian blinds, Alex saw that it was still snowing. She'd slept on and off for perhaps 5 hours, mostly off. Her mind was just too full, the thoughts jumping from one to the next like crickets. As bad as she felt, she drew some small satisfaction from how Slash looked even rougher than usual, a hangover in motion, if those dark patches under the girl's reddened eyes were any indication. Daniel didn't stir as Alex slid from the bed. She drew a quilt around his shoulders and laid a light hand on his forehead. No fever yet, but sweat greased his skin. Would the change let her come back? That was more likely than not. They wanted Daniel alive for the time being. She left the bottle of erythromycin where Daniel would see it when he awoke, just in case she was wrong about what Spider might have in store. She followed Slash into the hall. The house was dead silent, but the choking fog of roadkill was stronger than ever from so many changed in relatively tight quarters. Spider's door was closed, thank God. In the light of early morning, the photos on the display table gave off an enticing glimmer. She ached to study them. She eyed Slash shuffling a few paces ahead and thought, might not get another chance. Moving quickly, she slipped off her pack, tugged open the top, closed the gap, and then mock-stumbled one lurching step, then two. Slash grunted as Alex slammed into her back. Alex's supplies, pill bottles, packets of gauze and instruments, a roll of surgical tape, the plastic bottle of peroxide, bounced and skittered down the hall, and the two girls went down in a heap. Slash's shotgun rifle clattered, and Alex had just a second to think how lucky she was the thing hadn't gone off. Her knee gave a small shout as she banged against hardwood, but in another second, Slash cut a vicious slap that rang her ears, and then a scraped knee was the least of her problems. Cut it out! With her good arm, she shoved the other girl, then shrank back, both hands up, palms out in surrender. It was an accident, okay? It was an accident! Slash was breathing hard, the irritation practically fuming from her pores. She'd retrieved that shotgun, and there was no mistaking from the way Slash's shoulders tensed that she'd be just as happy reducing Alex's head to mist. Alex didn't move, and she thought now that this had been a really dumb, and maybe her last, idea. Then Slash lowered the shotgun a smidge and backed away, the big girl's upper lip peeling back in a silent snarl.
Okay, so far so good.
Her knee complained a little as she clambered to her feet, and she played up the limp. The knee really did hurt. She gathered her supplies thoroughly and slowly, which allowed time for her gaze to sweep the walls and that display table and those photographs.
As it turned out, she'd risk getting plugged for nothing, because in the coming days, Alex would see and study these pictures more than once. What she didn't and wouldn't know for another 5 minutes, although the lack of smoke chuffing from the guesthouse chimney ought to have been a clue, was that Sharon and Ruby were dead. Judging from the rigor, they were so stiff that it took Slash and Acne and a couple of Leopard's kids quite a while to jockey the bodies out of the guesthouse. They'd been dead for hours. How Sharon had done it was easy enough to parse. A smoggy chemical reek of vomit and half-digested painkillers and sleepers hung in a cloud, and small drifts of pills the women hadn't swallowed were scattered over the hardwood. Knowing Sharon, Alex thought the old woman had probably started just as soon as Alex was gone, doling out the pills like M&Ms, one for you, two for me, two for you, four for me. Alex could see it. After that little debacle, Alex would be ensconced in Daniel's room, no one tied her